Hello out there. Welcome to the Knights of Nerditude podcast, and a podcast for all things nerd. Based on the music, you know that tonight is another con on classics. And if you recognize the music, you will realize we're talking Black Hawk Down just in time for Memorial Day. I am Sean, and I'm joined here via Skype with...
Fucking Irene, Sam.
Super Six John.
Oh, that was mine. Oh man.
How about Tom Sizemore's life coach, Chris?
Yeah.
All right. So we're all here. We got a classic on our hand. Was it 2002? Black Hawk Down? Yeah.
2001.
Is it 2001? Oh, that's right. It's 2002 Oscars. It was nominated.
This came out like
December 2001.
Yeah.
Limited release.
Did it come out in December?
Limited release in December 2001.
This came out like a month before 9/11 or something.
Nope. December 2001.
Like, they pushed it up because of that. Well, other stuff too, but yeah.
2001 December limited release to make the Oscar season, and then it was wide released in January on Martin Luther King weekend.
All right.
Just like Martin Luther King would have wanted.
Yeah. Wait, January? Is January Martin Luther King or president?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember I saw this movie, I guess now that we're going into, I saw this movie with my dad, which would make me 11 at the time. To go see Snow Dogs with Cuba Gooding Jr. And then, like, catching, like, 20 minutes of this before that movie started.
Oh, man.
And I just remember it being awesome. Be like, why didn't we just go see this movie?
Chris, I saw this with you. I know that.
Yeah. We went to a theater, I think.
Yeah, we saw this in theaters.
Yeah. So we were watching. Because I remember it wasn't long before this or after this where I actually remember we were watching the bombing of Iraq on TV in my living room. Interesting. But yeah, 2001. It did get nominated for Best Director, Cinematography, Editing, and Sound, I think. And it won for those two.
Two of them, yeah.
Yeah, won for those two. So, and I think, did it win for Ensemble? I don't think
no,
it won for Ensemble,
it didn't.
Though.
Just won the two Oscars.
But why don't we just go into that?
All right.
Or do we want to do the stats first?
Yeah, go ahead, stats.
So, production budget, $110 million, and it grossed $173 million, which is it's a positive. Ratings of this movie are very big, more or less positive. They're in the 70s for...
Straight across.
What is it, Box Office Mojo?
Oh, I got... IMDb 7.7 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes 76%, and Metacritic 74.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Rotten Tomatoes. So it's a movie about if you haven't seen it, which, you know, please. It's the movie about the 1993 Mogadishu incident with the U.S. Special Forces and the apprehension of a Somalian warlord.
Yeah, he's a warlord.
Yeah.
He's also a war criminal. You can be both.
Yeah. I just didn't know what was more proper. But but it's about the incident. U.S. Special Forces tried to capture some of the lieutenants in his army. And it kind of went tits up. And
that's just a little.
Just a little, you know.
A little bit.
But it is a war story. It is a modern war story that is another depiction of how war actually happens. Because I think the more recent war movie and more accurate portrayal of war movie was Saving Private Ryan few years prior, right?
Yeah, it was two
and
years
I don't
prior.
Think I don't think after that there was an actual solid war movie. Between this and the previous, in Saving Private Ryan, I don't recall, but...
I mean, Thin Red Line came out the same year as Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
That movie, well, I don't exactly call that movie great, but...
I mean, the war movie you got to compare this to is the other one that came out in 2001, also starring Josh Harnett, talking, of course, about Pearl Harbor, which has... Okay, let me ask you, how many people, and we'll get into the cast in more ways than one later, how many people in that movie do you think are in this movie? Because it's a lot.
Is it really?
I mean, for two movies that came out the same year.
Pearl Harbor?
Yeah. I'm going to go with six.
No, I'm going to go with only about three.
Eight.
Sean's got it on the nose.
That's six, huh? Do you know the list off the top of your head? Or?
Yeah, it's Josh Hartnett, Sizemore, that guy with the Scottish name, Ewan Bremmer or whatever.
Yeah,
Ewan Bremmer. Glenn Moore showers in it. I mean, because then it's like, you think it's like, oh, it's a Michael Bay movie, so he always has the same, like, people in suits. Like, Kim Coates. I think Fichtner's in both, too. He's, like, Ben Affleck's father or something like that. So.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy, considering, like I said, they both came out the same year. And weirdly, Michael Shannon isn't in this, and you think he might, would be, but.
Yeah. Anyway, Black Hawk, Pearl Harbor is not really the greatest.
No, we are not going to talk about Pearl Harbor.
No, we're not. There are numerous movies that are better than that movie about the same incident.
Sure.
So this is directed by Ridley Scott, yep. And let's get into...
And importantly, the score is done by Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
One of his best works, I have to admit.
Going all out, I feel like we've never done this. We need to on the normal podcast. This is on my Mount Rushmore of movie like soundtracks.
Do you want to do it right? Oh, movie soundtracks?
Movie soundtracks.
Not just Zimmer?
Not just Zimmer. This is all-time movie soundtracks. Not just like one song. It's like the whole soundtrack as a whole. This is easily one of my favorites.
This might be my favorite Hans Zimmer movie.
Yeah, like this is. We'll do it on the normal podcast. So I kind of threw that at you guys. I want you guys to prepare a nice.
Do you have a Hans Zimmer one, Sean?
I probably do.
I could give you mine right now.
Oh, save it for the podcast.
Yeah,
we'll the normal the podcast.
Just the podcast.
Save it for the normal. Yeah. We'll save it for the normal.
All right, fair enough. Do we want to just talk about that though? Now that we're here, though, the score. Oh, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it comes
together nicely with the tone and the way the movie is shot. I think.
Mm.
Plus that like mix of like you got that like Arabian kind of chanting music mixed with like electric guitars and kind of like an American rock sort of anthem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great mix of like that culture clash that's going on in this movie.
Yeah. Even. Like, you know, it's not really the score, but throwing in the soundtrack when they have that Stevie Ray Vaughan version of Voodoo Child playing.
Yeah.
Like, that moment is, oh, that's awesome, dude. Like, I could watch that montage of, like, the helicopters taking off and over the water. Mm. Like, I could watch that on loop for an hour.
The thing that stands out most, and we've touched upon it before, is the spectacular cast.
Mm-hmm.
That this movie has put together is just unreal. Given this movie was done 19 years ago. If you were to ever think like picture these names together now, I don't think you'd ever see this.
This is a very high costly movie because of these names.
At the time it wasn't
right. Which we talked about. It was like other than like. Josh Hartnett, like, who was basically at the peak of his career when this movie came out. Everyone else was basically at the beginning of their careers.
Yeah, there were some Ewan middle. McGregor,
you know, Ewan McGregor had been in Star Wars.
Right, but I mean...
It wasn't a huge name, though.
Right. I mean, there was, like, Trainspotting, and then Star Wars, and then this.
Moulin Rouge. Yeah.
And I think about this. I think we mentioned this earlier. This is, like, these actors... are very much in the beginning of their career. Yes. Like this is their second or this is their third movie. And it just like Orlando Bloom's, he was big and was before this
Lord of the Rings,
Lord of the Rings,
Pirates of the Caribbean.
No. Was it before?
One
of
yeah. The biggest Lord of the Rings was what? Not was that 2000?
Was that filmed before?
No,
because wasn't it 2001?
It was. It was filmed. It was the same time. So, but Lord of the Rings is in the same year.
Okay.
But I think this was Lord of the Rings was released before this.
We don't.
Well, in any case, they shot all the movies at once. So, like, I got to imagine the production like began in like 2000 or
2001 is when Fellowship.
It was
came
same.
Out.
It was the same time. So this Lord of the Rings came out early December. Black Hawk Down came out. Limited release end of December.
Yeah.
So technically, this is his second movie, even though it's all, you know, it's a by a month, whatever it is. But you look at that, and then you have Ewan McGregor, episode one. I don't think. What's his face?
This was Tom Hardy's very first movie. This was Eric Bana's very first American movie.
Yeah.
So I think
there's so many people on the way up. Because it's not. Yeah. This isn't like Glengarry Glen Ross where like it's all like six A-list guys like together. It's everybody like coming up, and it's kind of cool. The only really like comparable thing, and I think this cast is like way bigger because like, but you get the same kind of deal with Band of Brothers, which also comes out this year.
Mm-hmm.
And is very similar and also has Tom Hardy in it. but
yeah,
you know, it's like Tom Hardy and Fassbender. Simon Pegg are in those for like 3 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
Like they're not. It's Ooh, weird because
Band of Brothers?
A lot. Yeah,
Fassbender is in it for more than 3 seconds, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, he's got like one or two moments. Like
he's in about 4 or 5 episodes.
Right, but
I've seen Band of Brothers at least 75 times.
It's like you pick a new guy each time. Like,
oh, you do notice something different. It is one of those series. God damn it, we're getting off track here. But it is one of those series where you do notice something every time you watch it.
Yeah. And then Jimmy Fallon shows up and you're like, what?
It was like the weirdest. It was like the most perfect time to insert Jimmy Fallon here because you know that this is becoming the most serious of episodes. It just brushes over the fact that he's in this.
Listen, we raise the stakes and we bring in Fallon right as they're going into Bastogne.
just to fuck with people.
So anyway, interesting. I was looking at this. I was looking at this thing online where they've kind of broken up the cast into three separate groups. And they wrote this. Granted, they wrote this 4 years ago, so the article has changed.
What website's this on?
It's We Are the Mighty. what it is they broke it down into three categories. One is just it's called Asymmetric Warriors, where it's just a couple roles, small, no-name people.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the regulars, which you know their faces but not their names.
Okay.
And then the one above that is the B. Dollar sign boys club, so it's the billion. Dollars.
Yeah.
So look at this. This is insane. Orlando Bloom 4 years ago had $2 billion, pushing three. So he was in this movie. Ewan McGregor, William Fichtner. What else? Scroll down. Tom Hardy, Jason Isaacs.
Fichtner's been in $1 billion worth of movies.
Huh. Ooh.
William Fichtner, the guy who he was in like the Dark Knight.
Dark Knight, TMNT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lone Ranger, Armageddon, Perfect Storm.
Yeah, he's been in a lot.
So you have Jason Isaacs, mm-hmm. you have I can't pronounce this. Ewan Gruffudd.
Ewan
Gruffudd, Stan Andreas, he was in Titanic. What else is it? Eric Bana is $1 billion. And then regulars, Tom Sizemore, Josh Hartnett, which he could be in the billion. This was 4 years ago. Who knows? Jeremy Piven,
yeah.
If you include like TV shows and stuff,
he has
to be in billion. The guy from The Sandlot, Tom Geary, Sam Shepard. I'm surprised he's not in the $1 billion club.
I mean, okay, sure. Like, is he in the $1 billion club? No, but is he like a Tony Award winning playwright? Yes. So.
Yeah. And then. This category, and then the last category they have there is Asymmetric Warriors, where it's just like regular guys who's starting off. Ty Burrell,
yep.
Who's the Modern Family guy.
Yeah.
He's got to be in the $1 billion club now.
No.
Yeah, like Glenn Morshower, the other guy in the helicopter with him.
Yeah.
They're just fucking.
Nicolaj Coster-Waldau, basically Jamie Lannister.
Yeah. Yep.
He's in there too. And then it's just pretty much everybody else. You have the guy who's what's his name? He's got a chick's name, Kim Coates. He's the guy from Sons of Anarchy. He's in this. It's just this cast is just unreal.
It's stacked from begin, like bottom to top. It's crazy.
So
you have Aaron from 24. You have Aaron from 24.
Go on. What was that, Sam?
I was letting Chris have his moment, but can I hit you with a hot take?
Sure.
This movie is an artsy version of We Were Soldiers.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a better version of We Were Soldiers.
Yeah, it was a better version.
Except there's no Broken Arrow.
Yeah.
And there's no
this
Vietnam.
This scene needs a Broken Arrow scene.
And there's no Vietnam.
Sam Elliott.
Or Mel
Sam
Gibson.
Elliott, who's just doing like Gettysburg Sam Elliott.
or Mel Gibson.
That's another, like, there's so, I don't know, maybe it's just a war movies thing where, like, by definition, they're going to have a bunch of, like, young actors in their 20s that, you know, you're just going to have, like, people who are rising. Like, John Hamm's randomly in that one, too. Like, a bunch of weird shit like that. But I think what I like about this movie is it's just, it's, like, spiraling out of control. You know, like it's like your worst kind of nightmare almost. Mm. And it's kind of rising above, you know, like part of this is, you know, for every, you know, Apocalypse Now or Full Metal Jacket or, you know, we'll say Jarhead or Generation Kill, you know, you're more kind of cynical war movies or whatever. You know, look, I like those. I enjoy those. But like. And it's not like this is like, oh, look, war is fucking great. But.
Yeah.
You know, this is like just a great like message of like, you know, overcoming and like not leaving anybody behind, you know, being there for the guy next to you.
I feel like at times this movie wants to get into that deep like conversation about like American military hubris and stuff like that. But it's like, that's when this movie kind of falls flat a bit. It excels when it's like, you know, soldiers are cool.
Yeah.
I hate to say it like that simply, but like, you know what I mean? Where it's like, that's when this movie hits its stride, when it's just trying to be that. It's just trying to be a celebration of soldiers and their camaraderie and all that.
So it's basically the moment that they try and get the Pakistani army to go in. And they're like, they don't even know we've gone in yet. That's what you're referring to? Okay.
Yeah, stuff like that.
They don't really fully commit at the beginning sort of thing. Like, you know, I don't know. You know, like, there's just...
We get, like...
It's not like a bridge too far, kind of, you know? Like, they kind of, like, bite off more they can chew.
Yeah, it's like, they don't really, like, introduce us to, like, what's going on in Somalia for a while.
Yeah.
So you don't really get context there.
You're right. And these are all like, these are Rangers, so it's top notch. And these are Delta, so it's top notch. You know, from my understanding, these guys are, they know everything about everything when they go in. So that's the one flaw. I think it came off a little, these are just generic kind of troops. Whereas I think the Delta guys, like, they'll know every twist and turn of that city before they even.
Yeah, I mean Delta is like the tip of the tip.
Yeah, and like Tom Sizemore is the commander of the.
I do like how like the dialogue in this almost feels like it's someone who just thinks Americans talk like they're in like Varsity Blues or like Friday Night Lights. It's like, okay, we're not all Southern.
Yeah. Right.
And everybody's just always like. The ball's on the 20-yard line. You gotta go in for the touchdown. Like, okay, we talk about other things, but okay.
It's like everybody... Okay, and this is unavoidable. A lot of British actors, a lot of foreign-born actors.
a lot of foreign.
Maybe they're not so hidden. because I'm gonna just be totally honest with you. And, like... we've gone through a lot of good actors in this movie.
Yep.
The accents, though, I've seen better days.
Yeah.
Like, everybody, as Sam hinted at, seems to either talk in, like, a Brooklyn accent or, like, is, like, from the Deep South.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, who's... I can think of a couple.
I got two off the top of my head that stood out for me. First was Orlando Bloom.
Is Eric Bana one of them?
I don't think... I think Orlando Bloom's, like, one that's actually, like, pretty decent.
I don't know. It's like, pretty bad. The other one...
Orlando Bloom is not actually that bad.
The other one is Jason Isaac.
Yeah, that was my second one.
Yeah. He's like the sore fucking thumb.
That's the one I was thinking.
And maybe it's because the only other thing I'd really seen him in before this is The Patriot.
Which, Jason Isaac, in this tone, very few times he plays a good guy.
Mm-hmm. True that.
Like, he's not playing a bad guy in this.
Okay, even...
Though he's like... I mean, he's not a bad guy, but, like, he's still, like, the, like, dick. You know, like, he's... He's not the best guy.
That was a weird, like, tangent the movie went on. Was, like, the rivalry between, like, the Deltas and the Rangers. We're like, dude, look how cool the Deltas are. Rangers are a bunch of stuck-up pricks.
It's like you're describing, like, Animal House.
Okay.
Did you guys see the making of this movie?
No.
So, all the Rangers went out to... basically ranger school and just a whole bunch of PT and stuff, but the Delta guys who were playing Delta guys just trained at, like, blowing shit up and stuff.
Yeah, they were like, you know, all the other guys are, like, fucking, like, crawling through mud, and it's like all the ones who went to the Delta camp or whatever, they're like, the first day they're like, yeah, we're gonna blow this door up.
Yeah.
And you know what scene I love? This is the very beginning. It's Eric Bana is being, like, all spy-y, and he's like, you know, hiding in Mogadishu, and it's like, dude, you're the one white guy.
He's the white guy with the Cyclops sunglasses, the bright red sunglasses on. Like,
sunglasses. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, how, so, like, what's his cover, though? Like, is he gonna be like, I'm Australian?
I think they were going with, like, they were foreign journalists or something, because that's what they kind of looked like, I was like, dude, you're like the one white guy in Mogadishu. You're not exactly blending it.
No, like, you stand out like the sorest of thumbs.
Shall I get to the questions?
Yes, please.
Oh, hang on. Oh. I need to like roast some more people here.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, go through your
my
list.
My boy, NKW, Jamie Lannister.
He was fine.
No, his is awful.
No, he didn't speak a lot.
He has one line when he's like, we're requesting to, like, go in, you know. I mean, the guy he's playing is a Medal of Honor winner. Tom Hardy's isn't that
good. It's not a winner, John.
Tom Hardy in general doesn't have a good American accent.
Yeah, I don't think you win that.
You're right. Especially when
the Medal of Honor goes to.
Do you think Ewan McGregor did his work? Because I don't think it does either. I don't think, like, most of them.
I'm used to that accent from him, so
I think his works fine.
Yeah,
kind of does, like, this traveling tour of America, or, like, at times he has, like, a southern accent, and at other times it's more like a, like, midwestern, and then kind of comes back to southern.
So the British people always like doing southern accents because they think it's easier. So this movie, for some reason, I feel like has a ton of southern accents.
Yeah.
So I just thought everybody was from Texas in this
movie. It's so, like, stereotypical for, like, if you're trying to show, like, the American military, it's like, yeah, they're all from Texas.
Yeah.
It's like
the Homa white boys.
It's like what the heck is that TV show where every British person goes to? And sit in the South in Bon Ton. True Blood.
Oh, God.
Everybody's British, but they have the same accent. It's Southern. It's just so bad.
Anyways, any other people you want to roast, John, for their accents?
Not really. I mean, There's more bad than good. I'm just gonna say.
Can I praise one thing about this movie? Well, we're praising the movie, but anyways. But can I mention one thing? You haven't really brought it up. The production design on the sets, fucking amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
The
yes.
sets in this movie are fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like this is a city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, no, it was filmed
It was
filmed in a city. I forget what city.
Yeah, filmed in Morocco.
Yeah, Morocco. That's it.
But like at the same time, it felt like there was a war going on.
Right. Yeah. Too. No, it felt legit.
Like, you could have told me they filmed in Mogadishu, and I would have believed.
So little bits of detail that were thrown in. Some of the audio during the battle is actual audio from the actual battle that they threw into the movie, and then in the the war room, how they have all the screens behind them, they're playing actual footage of the actual battle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because one of my buddies is a Black Hawk pilot in the military.
Yeah.
Or in the army. And he goes, it's some of the worst Black Hawk scenes ever. Because it's the most inaccurate things ever. So you don't have like those alarms going off immediately once the thing happens. Mm. He goes, I sat there and critiqued the whole movie. He goes, because that's what he did. That's what he did. He flew Blackhawks and he used to like test them and everything for like 6 years or something. And he goes, yeah, this one didn't happen. This one didn't happen. And this one didn't happen. And just everything in the movie.
Mm.
He goes, the rest was fine, but it's just all the Blackhawk stuff was.
Well, I
think they just sped it up for movie purposes.
Oh, well, yeah. Sure. I did hear.
Yeah,
was it,
like
this is
you turn the alarms on for
dramatic effect.
It's just drama.
But I guess this movie is played for people who are going to become an Army Ranger or something like that, or maybe it's Navy. No, it's the
Navy SEALs. Yeah.
That's it. So they play this for recruits for that, and there's a really cool little tidbit I wanted going with like the whole realism stuff. So when the Black Hawk crashes in like the middle of the city, that's almost all practical effects with it spinning out of control and then like landing. That's all that was actually done by a Black Hawk pilot.
Yeah. It's actually it's a great IMDb trivia page.
Yeah.
I guess it's literally the only thing that's CG is like once they hit the deck and like the rotors come off or whatever.
That's the only CG in that whole scene, which is
a really
amazing
cool thing. So at the time, and I don't know if this has changed because I'll get into it in a second. They had to get so to have the Blackhawks, because obviously that's the name of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They had to go through the military.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually get the same SOAR pilots, the special operations operators. Some of which who actually were the guys who were there to like fly some of the helicopters in this. So that's kind of interesting you say that, though, Chris, that's unrealistic. I guess a lot of it's probably, like you said, like dramatic effects.
Yeah. I think it's just dramatic. I think a lot of it is dramatic effect. Because he goes... It was in the summer, I think he was explaining it to me. And he's like, this stuff would happen in sequence, but it would be over time.
Yeah.
I think you might have mentioned,
like, it wouldn't happen that quickly sort of thing?
Yeah, I think he mentioned, like, you would have made it back a little bit further to the base.
Gotcha.
Then I don't know. He said something like that, but granted, it's a time of war. You don't really, you know, things do go to crap in those situations.
Especially in this situation.
Yeah.
You're expecting to be in and out in an hour. It ends up being a lot longer.
A day
plus.
It was was it a day plus?
I thought
it was just under a day.
Or was it just under a day?
I think it's under a day.
It's like 12. It's almost 12 hours.
Yeah, they leave in the early.
Oh yeah.
Like afternoon, they're back in the morning. It feels like it could be a week.
Yeah, I know. Like,
and I'm sure it felt even longer, especially the guys running at the end.
Yeah.
Can I talk about one thing here? Yep. Like, just the overall, though, like, and I don't know if this is something where, like, you have to have, like, Saving Private Ryan to happen before this, but just this movie just feels like everything that's come after it, or a lot of the stuff that's come after it, has felt very similar to this, but this was kind of on its own. Like, you like
of all the modern war movies.
Yeah.
Right. The standard.
It felt so much like in the middle of everything. And, you know, what'd you say? It won the Academy Award for editing. Like, I totally buy that. Like, it's like, you're never really confused. You're a little disoriented, but it's almost like purposely, but you still understand what
you want to feel that disorientation the soldiers are feeling, where it's like everything's kind of happening and you're not entirely sure what's going on, and but it's still clear enough where like you could follow the movie
And follow the action and
because you could have definitely gotten lost with both helicopters being down at the same time. You could have gotten lost between who's at where and, you know, all this other stuff. But I think that's also set design and production design too, because there really is a separation between that little plaza and then just on the outskirts of town.
Yeah, which just looks so iconic too. Like, I mean, maybe part of it is that there was a whole game that I still don't know how related to the movie it is. I mean, it's supposed to be the same thing. Delta Force Black Hawk Down, which I played way too much of.
By the way, that's on Steam if you're interested in playing that again, John.
Hiring it up again,
I own it, so let me know if you ever decide to.
Take it
around. I own it. I own it, too.
Yeah, so just throwing that out there if you ever want to play Delta Force Black Hawk Down.
That was my first clan.
Yeah.
John. Ben.
Wow.
Man,
good time.
Good time spending way too much time playing a fucking video game. Anyway, it's just, I mean, the immersion is just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
and that's what I think makes war movies good movies. That's what I think makes them the good movies. It's not those over... It's not those oversight movies, you know? Bridge Too Far, I think, was an oversight movie. It kind of followed them, but, you know, it was a three-bridge movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an ensemble. It's going for a totally different vibe.
Yeah, it's The Longest Day. You have this ensemble of A-listers, but the movie is like, so spread out and so long.
Yeah,
that
you can never get, like, any meat out of it. Like, it's just little bites.
Right.
And, like... It's just like, it feels like it's so spread thin. You just like are like, okay, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Can we use something?
I used to think the two were like very easily comparable too, but The Longest Day is actually like, it's like all tidbits. Like, there's like really nothing to hold on to. It's just like, oh, hey, this guy's on screen now. It's this guy. Like, you know, oh, John Wayne. What? John Wayne, you're like 60 years old playing a guy who's 35. What?
Yeah, when you watch Longest Day, because for some reason I can remember this movie, at the first time you see John Wayne, he's packing his parachute. You don't even see him on a plane. He's packing his parachute, and then he's excited because they get to jump at the Rome. And I feel like the next time I see him, he has something like a broken leg, and he's riding in the back of a car.
Yeah, yeah, that's like all I remember of John Wayne. That movie.
He's just like yelling at people.
Yeah. And then it's the other guy,
Sean Connery.
No. The other guy who played it, was he Spartacus? He was the general on the beach of Omaha Beach.
Robert Mitchum.
Yeah. And, like, the first time you see him, he's on a boat. And then the next time you see him, he's ordering people to blow up holes in the, you know, the German lines and stuff. I'm like,
right.
There's
like,
gaps. There's gaps.
Henry Fonda's in this.
Yeah. Yeah, Henry Fonda just shows up and is like...
He shows up to, like, walk on the beach.
With a cane, and it's just like, okay, thanks for sharing that. Which, in fairness, I've read that book. It's kind of what the book is, but, like, because it's a book, it can actually go into further detail than that.
And, yeah, if you ever... Man, we're getting way on a tangent here.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are.
The Stephen Ambrose D-Day one, where it's, like, literally... just the lead up to, and then D-Day itself, and it's like 3,000 pages or some crazy thing.
Yeah, I tried to read that one. That wasn't that good.
I also read Bridge Too Far, because Cornelius Ryan wrote both.
So back to Black Hawk Down.
That book's kind of sick.
Different era of, you know, wartime here. Mm-hmm. So let's get to some of these questions here.
All right.
Yeah, we've gone over a lot of stuff, so... What impact has this movie made on you specifically? I'll go first. I just think the standard is set for kind of modern war movies.
Yeah, I think that was going to be mine.
I think this is the standard.
This is the baseline for modern war movies, where it's either better or worse than this.
Yep, definitely.
So every time I'm driving in a city, in my head, I'm like Sizemore, just like driving around in the Humvee. Like that's like, especially when it's like somewhere I don't know.
John, you know what the sequel, and John, I know you've seen this, I don't know, maybe Chris has seen it, but you know, the feels like the sequel to this is Generation Kill.
The show?
Yeah, in some ways. Although the sequel to, like, literally that feeling of them driving around the Humvees is the border scene or the war scene in Sicario. Like, that's the only thing I could compare it to. But yes, it's Generation Kill is like, if I took that element and made that, like, a 10-hour miniseries.
All right. I guess I'll go now. I'm assuming, Sam, you're done with how this made an impact because you piggybacked on Chris.
My whole thing is, it's just, this is the baseline for modern war movies.
Right. Yeah, but dude, we're not sounding like this is just
satisfactory. No.
This is a good movie.
Yeah.
So
this is a solid, good movie.
So for me, how's this, the impact? First of all, I don't like war movies. Not a huge fan of war movies. Most of what you guys have been talking about this whole time, I've probably seen snippets of it because it was down at our house when I was growing up. Other than that, I'm just not into these kind of movies. I absolutely love this movie. But this movie also falls into that rare category of movies that are a great movie that you kind of don't really want to watch again. It's going to take a while to stomach it again because of how brutal this movie is. Like, when they get into Mogadishu, like, from that moment on all the way until, like, they leave, it's just brutal. But, I mean, in the best way, though. Like, and like I said earlier, too, this is one of my favorite soundtracks for a movie ever. And, I mean, John, like, you're basically on point with the whole, like, when you're driving through a city or somewhere you don't know, I take it one step further and I put this soundtrack on and I blast it with the windows down. Like,
as people are like running and hiding.
Yeah, like, they don't know. I remember once I'm driving through Woonsocket blasting the soundtrack.
Always. You said this movie's brutal.
What?
You said this movie's brutal.
From like a graphic violence point of view.
It's
like to show the realism of war. I mean,
Saving Private Ryan came out 3 years before.
Yeah, but
then.
It's the other than the beginning of it.
Saving Private Ryan is much more brutal.
Once again, it's only the beginning that is really bad.
I don't think the first 30 to 40 minutes of that movie make up for 3 hours of brutality for any other movie.
Because the other movie that I could think of too is like Glory. The very first battle in Glory is like guys' heads getting blown off. Like,
yeah, that was it.
But like the better chunk of this movie is that. Whereas those two movies, it's like the beginnings of those movies to really drive it home that war is hell. This is like the chunk of the movie is like that. I mean,
it doesn't have Vin Diesel like dying in the rain, be like, "Give this to my mother." Come on, they're like, "Don't move."
But like, I mean,
don't shoot, let him burn.
Yeah, but like, even in like the opening shots of this movie, where you see all the people dying. I mean, and it's pretty cool. It's all like fake body, like rubber bodies, where they insert like tubes to make it look like they're breathing. Like, you really understand how bad of a situation this is. Uh-oh, what happened?
And the dudes just rip into him with like the 50 cals.
Oh, yep.
So, but yeah, like, this is, and just to bring this up really quick, the kills to death ratio, which is like amazing for all those Call of Duty people out there. The kills to death ratio for this, for the Americans, was somewhere between 10.5 to 1 and 26 to 1. Like, the body counts were incredible. Like, so the Americans only lost 19 people, whereas the was the Somalians or the warlords people, they lost between 200 and 500 people in this battle. That's a lot of people.
So that's another thing that I'll have to push back on. There's like all like the Somali deaths were like cartoonish deaths. They're just like, they're shaking around like a big shot.
Yeah. Okay. Like, what's the most fucked up thing is like when the guy's like walking through the people's house and like he slips and the kid like shoots his dad.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, it's not. I'd say intense. I don't know if I'd say brutal. Not to get too hung up on this, but
yeah, I don't understand why you guys are so. Sam is so hung up on this, but
this is one where I almost if I start it, it's like I'm finishing it.
Yeah, 100%. I'm the same with you.
Yeah.
If I start in the middle, I might actually go back and start it.
I'd say this is a pretty easy watch.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not a put on and listen to. It's a put on and stop what you're doing and kind of watch it.
Yeah.
Next question. I think we touched a lot about these. What is the thing that stood out the most about this movie when you first watched it? When we first watched it, it wasn't the cast because these were all up and comers. I think it was just production design.
Yep.
Because it was a new setting, You had Pearl Harbor this year. A couple years before then, you had Saving Private Ryan. So it was all World War II.
Yeah.
And you kind of... I'm sure there were other movies for newer stuff, but this is kind of the...
But there's no, Gulf War movies, really.
Yeah.
At that point,
This is kind of like the first thing. This is kind of the first thing where you get that different setting.
Yeah.
Quote-unquote, for...
But even, like, going with the Pearl Harbor... The set production in Pearl Harbor wasn't very good compared to this movie.
A lot of
it
was CGI.
Exactly. But you compare the two, it's like they came out around the same year, have pretty much the same cast, but the production design in this movie is far and away better than Pearl Harbor was.
Yeah, not to get hung up on it, but like those sets, man.
Yeah.
Those are some amazing sets.
So you're right, though. There's a certain, like what Chris was saying, the fact that it's sort of exotic, too, and oddly enough sets up, like, effectively the next 20 years of, like, modern, movies between, the couple first Gulf War movies that come out.
Even the whole theme with the quagmire.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's, you could call that, like, post-World War II, like, U.S. foreign policy in a fucking nutshell.
Yeah.
Not to get political.
But like even like the whole like age of terrorism of just like we'll go in there and shit, now we're stuck.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, what are we really trying to do here? We're trying to get guys so we can get the other guy. And
yeah, it's like
it's not like it's not like we're trying to like take this French town to like, open up the Falaise Gap,
Yeah.
Huh. Sorry, I'm just trying to find a list of war movies by release date. There's so many.
Yeah, there's a lot of war movies.
There's a ton.
Yeah.
I mean, is anything... We say this is kind of like the standard bearer for, like,
modern,
which I'll just call post-Vietnam.
All right. Yeah.
Is anything come close? Really? Like, I mean...
To what?
I haven't seen like Lone Survivor and shit like that, so like
to be
I'm
as
assuming
good as
that it's not as good about Lone Survivor.
Lone Survivor is not bad. It's a different kind.
Mm-hmm.
I think Lone Survivor is close to the 12 Strong one.
Which once again, 12 Strong did not, well, it wasn't a great movie.
No, it wasn't spectacular. Again, different war.
Right.
Different war. Then there's a bunch of other ones. A lot of the newer war movies, you get a lot of the effects on the soldiers, after effects as well.
Yeah, so all the PTSD and stuff like that. Like, was it Jarhead, right? Dealt with, like, the second half of that movie was
Jarhead dealt with that.
Jarhead's more about, like, the boredom of war.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, American Sniper you had.
Yeah, the desert sort of thing.
Yeah.
American Sniper you had. Thank you for your service. You had... there was another one. The Long Walk of... what the hell is it?
I forget. Honestly, is the best World War... Or is the best modern war movie other than this... Is it Behind Enemy Lines? It might be.
I think Lone Survivor is better than Behind Enemy Lines.
Okay.
that's just... I don't know, that's just a little... Behind Enemy Lines isn't... I don't know.
it's got Gene Hackman yelling at people, so it like automatically goes up like three notches just for that.
But, yeah, that's a poor reference. Hacksaw Ridge was really good. But again, it's a lot of the build up to the one.
Wow. To give you an idea, just to go back to Lone Survivor versus Behind Enemy Lines, basically, everyone gives Lone Survivor the win on that one, especially Rotten Tomatoes.
The only other one, and this is the thing, is this is a totally different movie from it, but is The Hurt Locker. That's the answer.
Yeah, and you can get new. So you can get new. Like it's 13 hours is. I mean, it's technically a war movie, but 13 hours, even though it's very Michael Bay-ish, it was still pretty good. It wasn't a bad movie. It was fairly accurate, at least to the concept. Zero Dark Thirty again is a different kind of movie, but right. It's more of a modern movie. That was a really good movie.
Yeah, Zero Dark Thirty is more of like an almost modern spy thriller.
Yeah, it's not really a war movie.
Yeah, it's not really a war movie.
So I think you're saying 13 Hours is probably the closest, like the next best thing.
I guess just getting back to it, it's just incredible, and like I think the big takeaway is it was so different from anything else that kind of preceded it, really, that it just kind of stands out, and I feel like it's just like hugely influential. But whether it's I feel like you can't play like Call of Duty without feeling like, you've got like influences of like this movie in it,
Yeah. And the Call of Duty games have transformed into like this futuristic monstrosity of a video game. So
maybe more like Modern Warfare.
Warfare 1 and 2 are kind of where it's all at. Those were the best ones. And then they just kind of went off the rails.
That's good, because that's where I stopped. So
yeah, I played. What's the ones after that? Black Ops 1 and 2. I stopped there for 2.
There's 3, and I believe 4 is coming out soon, Chris. God, stick with the Black Ops.
4 is already out, Sean.
Oh, is it 4 is already out?
Yeah. Dumbass.
Yeah, right.
They redid Modern Warfare 2, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they just remastered it.
Yeah, yes. World at War. That was good until like people figured out how to glitch it, and it only lasted for like 2 months.
Like that one's only good because that introduced Nazi zombies.
Yeah,
honestly,
I would take a Nazi zombie game over a Call of Duty game. But Black Ops Nazi zombies, they basically introduced a plot. Like, not to go too much on a tangent here, but they introduced a plot, and I would like that to be kind of flushed out a little bit. I know. Hey, I can actually be a part of this tangent, though, unlike the other ones that you guys did.
The Nazi zombie thing, when they first came out for World at War, it was just, like, shoot and move.
Right, it was basic.
And then now they actually have objectives.
No. You're right. No, in Black Ops 1, there was a plot. where like it followed three guys.
But now there
was a scientist. But no, but like after Black Ops and like Black Ops 2, they got rid of the plot. Now it's just like, oh, you're here.
Tragic.
Oh, really? That's
how are they even going to turn the power on? what? Any other questions on this one?
What would we change, if anything? I wouldn't really change anything, personally.
I have one thing I would change, and that is to go back to one of my earlier points. You know how in, like, We Were Soldiers, we had that whole, like, subplot of the Vietnamese general who was, like, cartoonishly a soldier?
No, not really.
No, you don't.
We Were Soldier? Like, yeah, you're right.
They had like that opposing general, and it was just him in like a bunker, like yelling at people, pointing at a map.
Yep, you're right. No, he's 100% right.
But like
you say, subplot, but it was just like a couple cutaways, right?
Yeah, it wasn't any more than like
it cut away, but like in a strange way, it almost like allowed you to see the other side and like. They weren't just like just people running at the Americans.
Sure.
Like something along the lines of that in this movie, where we see something along that like humanizes the Somalis a bit more.
Well, I mean, you don't think you have that?
I think it's fleeting moments, but like,
honestly, I feel like the first act needs a little bit more to flesh out the Somalians.
Yeah, like some kind of context.
You don't think the guy who they pull out of the car?
Not really.
The room. I don't know if it comes off well, but I think that's what it's for.
That's probably one of the weakest points of like the movie because I'm like, after watching it again, I'm still not 100% sure what's going on that they're talking about in that scene.
Like, who is this guy?
Right, like, why is he important? Like,
he's the guy who sells.
But isn't it, I mean, like, isn't the important
some kind of context?
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't it supposed to be, like,
some kind of context?
Yeah, this is...
Someone, anybody.
John Yuka.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the sort of thing where, you know, it's, you know, civil war, it's our war sort of thing. Like, you know, it's like, why are you meddling in this?
Right,
but like
it's a little club-footed.
But like, yeah. Who is he? Like, do a little bit of backstory on why they stopped him. Like,
or like,
what, do you know? I don't know if that's important.
No, they tell you what he was doing in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just it. I don't think it comes off well enough, like or good enough.
You don't need to delve into it. It's just the
no,
guy
but I need. I need.
Like, he's the guy. He's not the guy.
Right. That's all you really understand.
They kind of play him up like he's going to be an important part of this, but then he just never comes back again.
Yeah.
Well, you see him.
Yeah, when the helicopters take off, that's about it.
Yeah.
But
can
like,
you imagine sitting behind, like next to all those, though? Just the rumbling, the whole place rumbling. Have you guys ever been to an air show?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're so loud.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, yeah, that would be the only thing I'd change. Where some kind of perspective from the other side.
Yeah, I'm with you, Sam. I need, like, a little bit... Just humanize the Somalians a little bit more.
Some kind of context to what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
Because, like, even that, like, that last scene, like, the Mogadishu Mile... when they finally get out of the hostile zone and they're running through the friendly zone and they're being celebrated, everybody's cheering for them, where it's just like, who the fuck are these people? I thought the whole city was again, but now this part of the city is for them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like some kind of context where it's like, now you can start to understand that this is a civil war and there's different sides and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess... that always did kind of seem a little clumsy. Like, the movie's, like, you know, over at that point, so you're like, okay, sure. But, yeah, the fact that they seemingly go from, like, people firing at him to people, like, then seemingly just not firing at him, like, even though they have guns and could, like, shoot him. But, I think you understand it, though. Like, it's not... I think though, Sam, like to your larger point earlier, it's not supposed to be this like, you know, oh, American hubris or whatever.
Yeah,
I think it's more just about the soldiers themselves, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, this was 100% like not an advertisement, but a, you know, this is why we do it type movie.
Right.
We only care about who's next to us, not anything else.
I think one tweak I would make. It's like the only thing that's like kind of weird. It doesn't really fit into the rest of the movie per se. Is like Eric Bana being like Superman in this movie. Like, I mean, he's a
Delta. John, he's the Hulk, not Superman.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. He's up there, like, doing the 50 cal, and then he even has, like, a decent, like, enough speech at the end.
Or even that, like, scene at the beginning where Jason Isaacs come up to him, like, that's a lot of weapons. This is my safety. He's, like, wiggling his finger.
Yeah.
It's just like, why is this in this movie?
I think it's just to prove that the Delta Force is just half cocked.
I know.
Yeah, well, I think it's
totally.
You're supposed to see that there's like a rivalry between Delta and the Rangers, and I think that's like somewhat true, though the relevance to the movie is like.
Yeah, we never get like a conclusion of that where it's like we have like something at the end where they're like, you know what? You Deltas are all right.
Yeah, but you like don't. That. The thing is, you don't need it.
No, you don't.
I don't know. I knew all that stuff. I knew the rivalry between the Frogmen.
You don't need it, but like you don't need it. But why introduce it?
Right.
If you don't need it,
if it has nothing to do with the movie's plot, then why are you including it?
I think the only thing was the separation between Rangers and Delta. I think that was just to establish there is a difference between the two.
But
there
like,
are two groups of people
then
here.
Then that separation never really matters
right.
for the
right.
rest of the movie. So it's like, why even establish that?
Yeah.
It's to kick off the stuff. I don't know. I think it's just to kick off
I think
the
it,
two personalities are different.
Yeah, but
I feel like
it was pointless.
Didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, there was no reason for it. Because it didn't further the plot. It didn't help any of the plot. Like,
all right, if you guys are all just harping on this one thing.
I mean, the only other... No, you're right. And it's a small detail. And frankly, it's the sort of thing that, like, you know... I mean, this movie's already 2.5 hours long, right?
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure there were scenes that were cut, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was reading the... like, an incredible cast of, like, writers who did, like, some... like punch up work on this. Like Sam Shepard apparently wrote some stuff, and like I said, he's an award winning playwright, and then they just didn't use it. But there's some other stuff like Steve Zalian, who's done a bunch of great like TV shows and some movies. You know, there's like a pretty good cast of like writers who did like some uncredited stuff on here. Although I'd still say, you know, Sam, I think you sort of brought this up earlier. Everyone sort of talks in like it's they almost talk like they're all in like a Western movie.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And I mean, yeah, look, these are all special forces guys. Like you're going to have some of that sort of dynamic. Like it's sort of impossible not to, but yeah, sometimes it's, I don't know. Like I said, I do like the speech Eric Bana gives where it's like, you know, people ask him, like, why do you do this sort of thing.
There's
just
like,
enough.
That movie needed some kind of...
Where is this streaming?
It's on Stars.
Stars.
Yep. Which, if you go on Google and you Google it, it says it's streaming on Hulu, but when you go on Hulu, you need the Stars subscription to stream it. So luckily, I get Stars, so I streamed it just not
all
off.
All my DVDs are in the shed, so I can't watch it.
I just straight up bought this movie because I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch this again.
Yeah, that's a good call, Sam. Where'd you buy it from?
I bought it on Google's movie catalog.
Okay.
I use that to just have all my digital catalog on that.
I gotta tell you what, man. Taking a pause on the movie thing for a second. I'm getting to the point with the lockdown, like, I'm not even thinking twice anymore. I'm just buying the movies. Like, I'll check to see if they're on streaming, but it used to be like, man, do I really want to buy this? Now it's just like, no.
Yeah.
Just buy it. Yeah. Don't care. Just 20 bucks. What else am I going to spend it on at this point?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's and even then, it's still not, how much is it on iTunes here?
I think this was like 15, maybe.
On iTunes?
Wow. Yeah, that was
nope, pricey. $8 on iTunes.
Oh, so it was $8. Oh, fuck. Did they give me a sucker price?
I think I spent 13 on this for Google. So,
jeez.
The problem is, I need to watch it on a tablet. If I buy it on Prime, though, I can watch it anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, see, you gotta, if you're gonna buy stuff on iTunes, you gotta get the Apple TV.
Yeah, at this point, I'm only doing Prime because I have Prime on everything, so I can just watch it wherever.
Exactly. All right. Any other questions about this one?
It's $8 on Prime as well. So,
yeah.
Is this an untouchable? So, I would say, the story. Yes. Untouchable. It was done in such a way that it was done so well. The movie style, though, keep doing it. All right. I think these are the best types of war. Let's face it, this is a war movie. I think these are the best types of war movies, is when you actually get involved with the troops and people who you're actually supposed to be with, not like Dunkirk. So.
Wait, no, hang on. Could you just I'm just curious.
I think,
could you explain how that differs from Dunkirk? This movie differs from Dunkirk?
I dislike the way
we're not going to talk about it after this.
I'm gonna back out of this one. Chris, you're on your own, Chris. You're
why? Right. Is it the same? This is the same thing, Sam.
He's just bowing out so it doesn't become a two versus one right now. He just.
I did not watch Dunkirk recently. But I can tell you that I'm probably going to hate it more than I did before. Not hate it. I didn't hate it. I just disliked it. It was too overarching. It didn't stick with... I don't know. I thought every person was the same person in the movie. There was no separation whatsoever.
Yeah.
Except for the guy in the plane.
You don't get this at all with this movie. Like, come on.
I can't imagine. I watched this movie hundreds of times, so I can definitely tell who's who, but, you know, when you first watch it, you're right. They probably all look like 18-year-old white
kids. Another great trivia tidbit is Ridley Scott does the, you know, this anachronistic thing where they write everybody's name on the helmets, where that's not actually a thing they do.
Mm. No, they just have it printed on the uniforms.
Right. So, but you know, it's still kind of helpful to keep track of everybody.
Yeah,
I guess. But it's like, also like their name is literally right here on wartime equipment.
It's true, but they're wearing a vest and everything.
Yeah, they're wearing a vest. No, plus, they have the guns and like
Velcroed on.
I know, but like it's easy to cover up the chest. It's very hard to cover up the head.
No. I understand why they did it.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong. But currently, it's right here.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm okay with the name on the helmet.
Before we potted, Sean mentioned, like, I need to track what actors. And I was like, dude, I just watched this movie. Couldn't tell you who died.
Yeah.
Really? Does Tom Hardy die? I forget.
No,
he does not die.
Because, like, before I watched this movie recently, I was like, let me Google who dies in Black Hawk Down. Like, maybe they'll give me a list. And they're like, Sam Shepard from Black Hawk Down died 3 years ago. I'm like, it's not what I asked. Like, yes, I know he was in the movie, but that's not what I asked Google. I asked what people in the movie died, but yeah, I never got the answer.
I bet you I actually could run through everybody who died in this movie. I
couldn't tell you who the biggest name actor who dies in it. Who, like Kim Coates? Oh, no, probably Piven, right?
Is Piven dead?
Yes, he died.
He died, okay. Because, like, he's alive for a bit there.
No, That's
after the crash. He's like, because like, what's his name from Modern Family is in Makes there. Like,
Ty. He's not him. That's a, both pilots are dead. Gun crews are wounded. So he was a gun. The two gun crew guys were still alive. The pilots were dead.
I was could have sworn he was like hooking up like Jeremy Piven at that point. And then later, it's just like, I think he's dead. He's not moving.
No, Jeremy, yeah, Piven's character died. He was a pilot in the Black Hawk. He died. The gun crew, they were still alive in the movie. Those were what they were hooking up. Because remember how they were digging out the pilots?
Yeah.
That's Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, no, I know which one's Jeremy Piven. It's just like, could have sworn for like, at least right after the crash, he was still alive.
Nope. God, I've seen this movie way too many times.
Fair enough. Well,
any last questions?
That was it for questions.
We always give it a rating at the end. You guys want to give it a rating at all?
This is like right up there with Apollo 13 and Houston. We have a problem with like one line, like marks this movie.
Yep.
With we got a Black Hawk down, we got a Black Hawk down.
Yeah.
Incredible South Park episode too.
Yeah, Red Sleigh Down.
Like great, almost great like it's like what a top five easily.
Easily.
Wait, what was that?
Red Sleigh Down from South Park. It's a Christmas episode.
Oh, I don't watch South Park, sorry. I only watched the World of Warcraft one, but that was it.
It's got plenty of great episodes. Anyways.
I'm sure. Who do we think is the biggest actor who came out of this?
It's actually kind of a hard question.
Yeah.
It's probably Hardy, right?
It's a debatable one.
I guess.
How about this? Who do you think made the biggest transition from this, at the time it was released, to now?
Josh Hartnett.
Positive, not negative.
Honestly, like I would say the two biggest actors to come out of this were probably Orlando Bloom and Ewan McGregor, in my opinion. Obviously, because I would say Hardy, but like he's done so many like bit parts that like usually when he's like the front runner for a movie or TV show, it's kind of fails. But like when he's in an ensemble,
like a big name, he's a big name guy with really nothing to show for it.
Yeah,
like Venom,
which like so many people praise him in Venom, and I don't know why because he is easily the worst part of that movie.
Tom Hardy's second best war movie, by the way.
I would easily say Orlando Bloom and Ewan McGregor are the two biggest names now to come out of it because everyone knows those two names.
Do you think I could even say Jaime Lannister?
No, you're using his character name. You're not even using his actual name.
Because I can't pronounce his whole name.
And nobody can.
He did nothing else.
Yeah, like, Nick. Like, I can't tell you, like, two other projects that he's been a part of.
Odds of dipping that rom-com.
Well, you...
With Kate Upton.
Oh, right? I love that movie.
What movie?
The Other Woman.
Oh.
I love that movie. It was one of my top five movies.
Oh, boy.
Of what? Ever?
The decade. It was on the decade list.
No, bullshit. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was. Hold on. I got to find it, but I'm pretty sure it was my top five.
The other...
Jesus
Christ. Oh, my God.
I got to find it, but I'm pretty sure it was on my top five movies of the decade.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait. I put out a big piece of paper. I can't... I got to find it. Here.
Well, this is... I mean, like, the RPG's just
fine. Oh, top 10. Here we go. Yep, top 10. It was number 7.
Oh, my
little
God.
Little vibration in the tail road. You know what I mean?
It was number 7. God.
Wow. Wow.
Hey,
what's up?
You do you, bro. You do you.
Fair enough. Do you give it an actual number?
Yeah, we've always given these movies numbers.
I'm going to give this a 9.3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sam?
That might be higher.
I'll give it like an 8.5.
All right, Chris?
I'm a 9.1.
I'm closer to say I'm like an 8.2, but mainly because of the soundtrack. Soundtrack definitely elevates this a lot.
Yeah, your number's also skewed too. You don't like
I don't like war movies. Yeah, but this is, like I said, this is probably my favorite war movie of all time.
Over Platoon?
Yes.
And Spartacus?
I wouldn't really consider Spartacus a war movie, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a sword and sandal movie.
Yeah.
It's I forgot there's a subcategory.
It's not really a war movie.
That's a thing.
All right, well, that was our first, was it non-Ridley Scott movie?
What? Oh.
What do you mean?
That was our Con classic. That was our first one that wasn't...
This is a Ridley Scott.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah, this is the other way around.
Aliens wasn't Ridley Scott. That was Cameron.
I'm sorry.
This is our first Ridley Scott.
Spielberg?
This is our first.
First two were Spielberg.
Yeah.
Then we did James Aliens.
Yeah. And now we're doing this one. So this is our first Ridley Scott.
Oh, this.
So, yeah.
It's Ridley.
All right. Any final thoughts or anything about this movie at all?
Yeah, I have too many screens open on my thing here.
Ooh.
Well, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's right. It. Any other comments?
No more final thoughts? All right.
So Ridley Scott, Gladiator and Black Hawk Down come out in back-to-back years.
Yep.
Just two just incredible action movies.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, I'm going to play us out with...
I did watch G.I. Jane the other day.
Oh, okay.
That one wasn't... For some reason, I like that. Sorry.
Well, anyways.
Like it better than that?
No.
No. All right. Well, if you like it... Oh, yeah. Incredible what?
The movie has an incredible closing.
Oh, yeah.
Is the outro playing?
Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah.
All right, we'll close up the hangar.
All right. If you like any of our podcasts, you can find us on Podbean, Stitcher, and iTunes. Find us at facebook.com/KnightsOfNerditude. And leave us a comment. Let us know if there's any classics that you want us to review. Seems like this is our formula for a bit till the theaters reopen, so... expect every other week to get a new Con classic, but back to normal next week.
Fast Five, baby.
Yeah, we're going to get into that.
And Scoob.
Yep. All right.
We're going to go down the Scooby-Doo rabbit hole.
Oh, boy. All right, well.
Welcome to hell.
Until next time.
Bye.
Later. In days of old, eternal.